Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to the show, Pasha Esfandiary.
Thank you, Victor. I appreciate it. I appreciate getting put in the category of notable real estate people. So,
well, it fits absolutely. And it's great to have you here. Now, you've got a very interesting perspective because the world of investing, there's a psychological element to it, but there's also parallels to other elements of life. And you are also a professional poker player, which gives you some unique insights into human nature and psychology and all the rest. But before we dive into the details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Sure. Thank you, Victor. Yeah. So I took a little unconventional path in my career right after high school. Very shortly thereafter, I started playing poker. Yeah, I started playing with friends and I started doing really well. I've always been into video games and games, and I enjoyed that element of competition. So very quickly thereafter, that's when poker really kind of blew up. I don't know if anyone listened to or knows poker that's listening to this, you know, Chris Moneymaker, 2004, all of these things. Secondly, my brother happens to be one of the most winningest poker players in the world, and he won a tournament back then. And I just said, well, if my brother can do it, I could do it. And it really took off from there. So played a lot, but I really played professionally from 21 till about 26, 27. I still play here and there, very rarely at this point. And it was great. It took me all over the world, and being 21 and being able to make what I was making, it was really interesting. But I always knew that real estate was my end game. And so I remember living in Las Vegas and thinking to myself, if I could break down my life into really long increments, and this is what I do, you know, for my, you know, career and always is, I think 10 years down the line, what is 10 year older Pasha is going to thank the present Pasha today for? And so I knew that I wanted to build a real estate career. And I said, hey, that's the end game. So I actually removed myself from poker, not because that I wanted to, but because I saw the bigger vision for myself. And so I took a few steps back. I went and interned in real estate and I started to flip homes, you know, like most people do. I bought them sight unseen in auctions. And then I moved to Los Angeles. I started developing and land up construction here in LA, and then got into multifamily, and then realized, hey, mobile home parks has this stigma. There's a kind of golden opportunity here. And I really ran into mobile home parks kind of head first. And now we have a little under 2,000 lots that we've built a sizable portfolio in the last 3 years of.
I love it. You know, there's no one prescribed pathway into this business. There's so many different journeys. Now, you've been at this a little while. What have you seen in the last couple of years? I mean, there's been a lot of lessons for even some very experienced folks in the last couple of years. What, if I was to ask you for the top one or two lessons, what would they be?
Confirmation bias will always bite you in the butt. And let me tell you what I mean by that. So when you say there's a lot of really good skilled operators here that have been getting into trouble, well, really kind of at a foundational level, what are the things that get you in trouble? And it's typically and always almost you can't execute your plan. And secondly, you have debt on there that's going to bite you in the short term or long term. And so if you don't stick to your numbers, if you don't stick to your thesis and to your investment plan, at some point you'll get washed out. And you might be the most successful for 8 years and keep riding the wave, but you're going to be encapsulated into this echo chamber of that this is the way it's always going to be. And what I found is that, and what I've stressed to my partners and within my company is that during that time where everyone was buying, I always made short and drove home. We have to be uber conservative in our underwriting, no matter what. Even if we miss out on some of our deals, that's okay, but we're going to be around for 20 years while others will get washed out. And case in point, when that happened, when interest rates shot up as high and fast as they did, people were in this state of panic of, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. The government, but it's really your fault. You know, these things happen. It's very cyclical. And so if you don't protect your downside in the long run, I'm going to beat you.
So there's parallels between what you just described and sitting at a card table.
100%. I think so. It's we could go really deep into all this, but really human nature gets really stuck into recency bias. And so for what we're talking about. So if you're consistently winning in multifamily or anything in commercial real estate, your recency bias is like, this is the model that's going to keep working. And you get stuck into that echo chamber. Same with poker, right? And in poker, somebody may be doing something currently in the present moment that is garnishing short-term results that is beneficial. They're winning money, but it is the long-term wrong play. Right. And so to be a really good poker player, you have to do really two things. A, you have to adjust to your opponents faster than they adjust to you. So you have to change your strategy. And then secondly, you have to make the correct mathematical long-term decision in the long run, even if it garnishes bad short-term results. Or a case in point, here at Evoke, we didn't buy a lot of properties while others were buying many, many properties, or as many as we could have, because we're a little bit more conservative. But in the long run, that's the better decision. But again, you get stuck into that recency bias and you're only focused on the short term. You're like, oh, well, I'm winning this way. This is the only way, without poking holes into it. And so I think real estate is such a beautiful game, let's just say, because if you stick to the fundamentals, you really will go far in the long run.
As long as you don't get upside down in a catastrophic way, I mean, real estate's extremely resilient. I mean, the beauty of inflation, I mean, inflation affects everybody the same way. It devalues purchasing power for those on fixed income. It devalues your savings and it devalues your debt. If you know that, just organize your affairs to come out on the winning side of that. And so it really benefits the equity side of the equation for real estate investors. First and foremost, it is ultimately, it's a wealth transfer. It's a
It
theft
is.
of
It
sorts,
is.
right?
It really is.
Right? I mean, this would be the equivalent if you were in Vegas and you had a magic deck of cards where you could basically print cards at will, they'd take you all back and break your knees. Right? But that is the game. That is the game that we're playing. It's just that we don't have that magic deck ourselves. Federal Reserve does, or the Treasury, and they're printing those cards at will and devaluing all the other cards that are in the deck.
The beautiful thing here is that interest rates are a neutral event, right? And so everybody can evaluate the neutral event in a different way, but human nature allows us to get emotional about neutral events, which leads to mistakes. That is the crux of how a good poker player will make money, is off of others making mistakes. And we know with human nature, we're emotional beings. And so you're always going to get into this decision-making process that might not be as beneficial as you think it is later on, because you're ignoring some of the facts. So everything's a neutral event. It's just how we process it. And then, can you underwrite it? Can you pro forma it out? Can you make sure that you could stand the test of time with your strategy and your investment thesis?
So break it down more for us. You're at the table, you've got two pairs, and you're trying to decide what to do next. What would be an example of a mistake?
There's so many there. Okay,
Sure.
so and I'm going to try to play within the context of it. I mean, like, not betting enough could be a mistake. Folding to a bigger bet later on, or thinking naively without really processing the information and processing the story and the chain of events that led to you guys to this point. If you have a decision, I'm going to paint some color on your scenario. You have two pair, and your opponent put you all in for whatever X amount it is, and you're saying, well, is my two pair going to be good, and am I going to beat this opponent? It is a mistake to just assume, well, I've seen this opponent bluff before, so he's probably bluffing. That's recency bias at best. So that would be a mistake. In those moments, a lot of times, I've seen it many, 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 many times, is that poker players, or people who play poker, not poker players, get emotional and they make a decision off of like, oh, I don't want to be bluffed. I don't want to be made look stupid. Instead of just really following the story, hey, what did my opponent do on the flop? What position was he? What kind of cards does he like to play pre-flop? What about on the flop? Did he bet this as he had an overpair, or did he slow pay it when he had a big set? Because typically it's two different strategies, right? If you have an overpair, you want to potentially start building the pot already, because you have a hand that is kind of vulnerable, but you want to keep building the pot while you have the odds in your favor. Or secondly, did they slow play it because they have such a big hand that they want to try to make sure that I stay in to get as much money as they can from me. What do they do there? And then on the churn, what do they do to my information? And so you try to break down the whole story and you say, okay, in this spot, that person playing in this position, you get to a probabilistic percentage of when you're winning and you're not winning. Typically, a two pair is super strong and it's hard to even make a pair. So I would most likely call in those positions.
Connect the dots for us how that translates into real estate.
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny because with real estate, so right there, we were just talking about information, right? So poker is a game of incomplete information. And you're always trying to read between the lines. What did he do here or she or what did my opponent? What I tell people in real estate is a game of 99.9% of complete information. Like if you do enough education and you do enough due diligence and you're conservative enough in your numbers, it is not, in my opinion, a risky game. It's not. But again, people will get in trouble because they get themselves into a scenario where everything has to go right instead of already underwriting for potentially everything going wrong, right?
Well, let's stop there because and let's define a term here, which is, I think, important for the listeners to understand. A risk, by definition, is anything that's not assumed in your plan. So if it's outside of your plan, it's a risk. You know, if you plan for, 5 days of weather delay and you only got three, you're golden. But if you plan for five and you had seven, you had 2 days of risk, right? And so the question really then becomes, how much risk are you willing to carry? And are you even aware of the risk? Have you quantified it? And have you categorized it? Because you do that at the poker table. The question is, how many real estate investors do that consciously in their underwriting?
That's I think now with the way everything's gone online and teaching programs, I think we're a lot better as a society of understanding what a good real estate deal is. But again, I still see people getting into real estate and making an emotional decision because they want to buy a deal instead of, and I love the way you put it, a risk is something that you haven't underwritten for. And that's why I do think that real estate isn't risky when you have the experience and you understand what you need to underwrite for and building in buffers and cushions inside of your numbers. Because as a developer, you learn that everything will go wrong, especially when you're doing on a hillside like I did. Everything that can go wrong will go wrong, but that's okay as long as you underwrite that and you wait for those good deals to come your way. And then this is, again, why I'm in mobile home parks, because I find better deals because I'm buying from mom and pop sellers. So I have more cushion of safety, in my opinion.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Pasha, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
You could just go to my website. It's www.evokecapital.net, or you could just email me at pasha@evokecapital.net, or on LinkedIn, Pasha Sfandiari. You can find me there.
Fantastic. Well, love what you're doing, and love the parallels with poker. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Pasha at evokecapital.net. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.